Welcome to the Linux Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into the reaction to the rest of the draft, day three, and some thoughts, initial thoughts on my board. I have not yet published my board. However, I do want to think a little bit more about it, and yeah, I need to edit it and that whole rigmarole. So I haven't yet done all of that, but I do have some initial thoughts on like the first round. So let's do that. We'll just do a quick rundown of the players drafted today that I think are relevant here. So Brian Robinson at the end of yesterday, and then you got Dameon Pierce up at the fourth round. Be careful on him. You know, the trap to a bad historic outcome is drafting a round two or a day three running back in round one of a rookie draft, right? That is historically a bad outcome. So you want to be careful on that. And so that would be my biggest piece of advice there with that is to just be very cautious about his cost. So again, I like Dameon Pierce as a player. I am dubious of his cost, and we might not necessarily be all that active on his price point, just because I think he could push really early in round two, if not into round one in some drafts, and at that point, totally off the board there for me. All right, some another ones. Zamir White, interesting injury away spot there. Isaiah Spiller, another interesting away. Injury away spot there. I think he's a likely best running back off the board. Second best running back behind Eckler, getting out of bed tomorrow. So he is, I think, by far their second best running back. So that's, and again, offers a little bit in both the running and the receiving. Is he a huge? Did he test well? Did he have a perfect pre-draft process? No, but I think he lands in an excellent situation for an injury away role. So excited about that. Pierre Strong, that situation's blocked. They must be looking more into maybe the next phase of this and the Dameon Harris. Say, listen, we're just going to take a running back between, you know, 90 and 150 every year, and that's just kind of what we're going to do. And this year it's Pierre Strong, and they're just going to keep sort of going through that, kind of what it feels like. Hassan Haskins, potential injury away in Tennessee. Tyler Algier is one that I think is interesting in the Atlanta offense. Again, there's a potential starting spot there, if not at least an injury away role. So I think that's a really interesting one. Snoop Connor as well, and Jacksonville potentially on the injury away role. Jerome Ford has one in Cleveland, a fifth round. That is, I don't know if it points to a potential Kareem Hunt. And I mean, you've got a Kareem Hunt. If he's definitely a cut candidate at $6.5 million and all of it could be saved. I don't know if this is that or if it's after, you know, you're looking down the line. But all of a sudden, that running back core is really crowded with Ford, D'Ernest Johnson on top of Hunt and Chubb. There's four guys right there. I'm not sure what the special teams fit is for all those guys either. So you just start looking at that and you think, all right, like there's a lot there. So Ford's interesting, and I wonder if that maybe foreshadows something here down the line. Kyron Williams to the Rams. I'm not a huge fan of his, but we'll see. Maybe he offers a little bit something in the passing game for them. Ty Chandler to Minnesota. He's on the older end. I do think that's interesting from Madison's a free agent, Dalvin Cook is a potential cap casualty next offseason. Kenny Nagan was more of like a returner. Is Ty Chandler have a shot at being an injury away guy or better heading into off the next season? I think that one's interesting. Kevin Harris, again, buried for the Patriots, so be careful on that one. I wouldn't take Kevin Harris over I wouldn't take him over Pierre Strong either. So, I mean, that's just a I generally don't switch the order of the guys in the same draft typically. Tyler Beatty or Beatty is a pretty explosive guy, ends up with Baltimore. So that's an interesting one, a little bit of a comp, a stylistic contrast to what they have at that position. Keyonte Ingram should compete for a backup role with Eno Benjamin. So that's a really interesting one for the Cardinals. So he'll be on the board. Tristan Ebner and Connor Hayward. Ebner, is more of like receiving type, kind of not really an HHG type candidate. And Hayward was actually a fullback. So going back to Pittsburgh. So some interesting stuff there. We'll see ultimately how that all unfolds, and watch the watch. I'll have a board. My board will probably be finished. My official board will be out no later than Tuesday. I'll have some additional content. We'll talk about this, some other stuff here in a minute about it. But it'll be out no later than Tuesday, and I'm hoping to have it out on Monday. But I don't want to. I do want to be able to proofread it and go back through it and think about a couple scenarios and stuff that I'm sort of hung up on. So that's all that. And just make sure I don't miss anyone relevant or anything like that. Okay, some stuff at wide receiver. I think the big story today is no Justin Ross. Like, I joked on Twitter that he must not have a spinal cord. That must have been what they found in his athletic test. Not a ton of interest on day three, guys. Calvin Austin's interesting, but from Memphis, but not sure there's a huge role for him. Undersized guy going to Pittsburgh. Khalil Shakir out of Boise State. They just keep adding guys, and they're like, all right, we'll just take another day three guy. We'll just take another day three guy, and actually find some success with Buffalo. So that's an interesting one. So those are really the guys there, I think, that are interesting. Probably not going to have many guys. I mean, 17 guys in the first 2 days. We don't need to go searching day three for a ton of wide receivers. Tight end. Dulcich was last night. Rucker was last night as well. And then Otten, they finished out that later part of the third. Rucker finished out the later part of third round. And then Otten comes up right at the top of the fourth round. Interesting there. Again, you put kind of those guys in the same group. So Jelani Woods, Dulcich, Rucker, Otten, Bellinger, Charlie Kohler is interesting as well. Jake Ferguson, Isaiah Likely, and Chig Okonkwo out of Tennessee. All of those guys in that round three, round four tier. So for what it's worth, I do think if you don't necessarily want to be in on maybe a ton of those guys in like a start one, two PPR, 28 man safe leagues. But if you're playing two tight end, like I do think fleshing out the back end of your roster and just taking two, maybe three shots in this class, there's a plenty of that profile to do it. And again, I think a lot of people don't like this class, but it's very much that they don't like the class at the top. I actually like the class in terms of some of the depth options that it gives. Up at the top of the board, I know people have some drafts beginning on Sunday, and I am evolving on this class. I'm evolving a little bit in terms of what our goals should be, because the base rates help, right? Density rates help, right? Looking at the difference between something that I even consider is like top 12 versus top, hitting for two top 12 seasons versus top 24 season, right? You're getting at how much you're truly mattering, right? And I think thresholds are important to consider as baselines because it gives us an idea of not just, you know, willy-nilly, you know, drunken shooting at targets, right? I mean, that's, you know, people say, well, that threshold's bad or this threshold doesn't, it doesn't tell you much. Well, at least it tells you something. I mean, you just can't fire haphazardly, like you're playing a drunken game of hit the pinata because you're not going to accomplish anything. So I do like trying to aim for targets. And that's a lot of the reason why base rates are important, a lot of the reason why density rates are important, understanding hit rates, understanding player profiles, and that sort of thing. And that can get, I guess, easy would be maybe an overstatement, but the patterns appear, right? And this isn't a, it's not super difficult, I don't think, in terms of, you know, we can look at teams, we can look at, player arcs, and we can look at player pedigree and understand kind of what that means. I think looking a step further and just thinking about it conceptually can help sort this out. What do I mean? Well, there's a lot of wide receivers drafted in the first round this year, right? There is a good chunk of this class that was drafted high, which is, again, people are going to complain about this class. I think you have to, I mean, ultimately, you've got six wide receivers drafted in the first 18 picks of the draft. I mean, we can complain, but, like, let's be realistic about it could be a lot worse, right? That it could be worse in terms of that. And if you were to measure from, I don't know, 6 to 12 in a class, like, this is probably not that bad of a class, right? What you're worried about is some of the stuff up at the top. That big supply of wide receivers makes it a strategic question about what you're trying to accomplish. Do you want to try and take a big swing? I don't think the price of moving up, if you want to take a shot on Drake London, if you want to take a shot on Jameson Williams, I don't think that they're that expensive to move up for, right? If you're in the mid first or something like that and you want to move up, the person trying to move down might only get a second, right? And we've talked about this, you know, what's the goal to try and move down? Well, move down, you know, get one of the guys that's in the first round or, in the tier of guys I'm going to talk about and get a future first, right? That should be your goal. Well, if you can't do that, right, I think maybe multiple seconds on a move down, get a player, right, sort of shooting another way. But if the general rule of thumb is you can't get what you want to move down, there might be value in moving up. Maybe there's value in moving up to one. Maybe there's value in moving up to two. Maybe there's value in moving from, you know, Garrett Wilson to Drake London, right? Depending on how you think. I think these are tough to sort out. I think Garrett Wilson blends in. I think Drake London, if you look for a dominant wide receiver, I think he's got a better chance than the rest of them to be that. I think Jameson Williams is the other one that's probably got a better chance to be that. But again, that's a small ledge. And so those aren't bets that I typically tend to like because they're really tough to get right. And if we're picking between six wide receivers, the odds that we're going to get, you know, if I can get, you know, if we're picking between six of them and, you know, we can narrow it down to say, hey, this one's got a 20% shot to be the best one. Like we're that's the odds of 1 in 5 versus 1 in 6. And honestly, that feels like a good outcome, right? Again, we have to recognize that there's a lot of uncertainty here. I think everyone would probably say that Jahan Dotson's the worst of this class. We have done this deal where we've done the worst of the class ends up being the best. That person is currently the wide receiver one, right? In terms of Justin Jefferson being, I guess, technically Brandon Ayuk came in behind him. But if you look at like tiers of that, right, the tiers of how that class was thought of, the worst of the top four first-round rookies in that class, he was not in there. Right? He was the worst of them, right? He wasn't really in the top three of that class. And again, the market has a really hard time getting these things right. So that's sort of my general rule, right? Don't pay up for random bets. And that's sort of the deal. That's my sort of median, right? The other side that I think about this is And I haven't done a ton of testing on this. I don't really know how to shoot at it. But as I'm sitting here thinking about this, just conceptually, what does success look like for Garrett Wilson? Like, is it a better version of Corey Davis? Is it a better version of, is it basically operating in the wide receiver two type landscape? That's kind of what I think. Is that helpful? Sure, right? But is that really, if we're trying to hit for one top 24 season, really, are we trying to capture floor? Because that's really what it feels like. You know, that's what it feels like. And floor is nice, right? We want to try and protect floor. But I think floor at wide receiver is one of the easiest things that you can do in all of Dynasty. Right? There's just so many guys. 17 of them drafted in the first 2 days of the draft. A handful of those guys are going to suck. A handful of them might be really good. And the rest of them are going to be largely replaceable amongst one another, right? And so, you know, if there's 17 of them, five to seven of them might suck. Three of them might be good. The remainder of them might be like, it could be that couple. It was a couple years ago where there was like seven different quarterback ones in Dynasty, right? It could kind of be like that in terms of rotating guys. So that's, there's a lot of uncertainty in there. If we're trying to take a big swing, what does that look like? And I think the big swing is Drake London. I think the big swing is probably Jameson Williams. I guess theoretically it's Treylon Burks, although I have my doubts in terms of that profile. Listen, I think big athletic guys who underperform in college, that's not typically the best profile. Right? That's not necessarily a profile that I think tends to have a ton of upside. Right? It tends to be a frustrating profile more than a super productive one. I think the two profiles in this class that could really, outside of what I would say would be Jameson Williams and Drake London, I think the two profiles in this class that can really make a huge difference and that have sort of, you look at their 80%, 90% tile range of outcomes, and it's a lot higher, right? It really outpaces its median. Sky Moore and Christian Watson. And because they're attached to the superstar quarterback, and honestly, there's an opportunity there. Is Chris Olave going to be the wide receiver one? Is Garrett Wilson going to be a wide receiver one? Is Treylon Burks going to be a wide receiver one? Is Jahan Dotson going to be the best wide receiver on his team? I'm not sure any of those guys are. I'm not sure in the next 12 to 24 months that either of those things happen. Christian Watson has a golden opportunity to be that. And there's not a ton of competition. Again, is there questions? Sure. Is there small sample size good numbers? Yes. Right. Is it a seamless transition from FCS to NFC North? It's not perfect. Right? You have a lot of uncertainty there. However, that uncertainty, right, that physical profile, the athleticism, the quarterback, all of that presents to you a very high top 10, top 20 percentile in terms of outcomes. And so that's really the thing that I'm pretty interested in. When you look at the other thing too, you start looking at some of these, the base rate stuff. One of the problems with Watson and Sky Moore, both 20-year-old breakouts. And, that's good for about a 26% hit rate in the second round. And you compare that to a hit rate for Garrett Wilson, that's 45%. Jameson Williams, 45%, because they're first-round guys. Drake London, Olave, both at 71%. The other guys in the first round are all at about a 45% hit rate, right? So that's sort of my how I would sort of tier them, right? Is I think outside of the situation being really right, I think the high end of the situation for both Sky Moore and Christian Watson make it so that way they're on pace with the base rates of the guys ahead of them. This might be a situation where this entire conversation doesn't matter because people are willing to vault those guys up and draft them at wide receiver 3 or 4. If you're shooting for a high outcome, it's probably that makes a lot of sense as a bet. What are we trying to accomplish is the big thing. If you're trying to accomplish an elite outcome at the position, I think that that taking a shot on Sky Moore, taking a shot on Christian Watson, knowing there's a higher chance that it busts, but that there's also a higher chance that it makes a difference. If you want to do that at wide receiver 4, 3, 4, 5, 6, something like that, you know, up in that range of the first round guys, right? You're going against base rates. Understand the bet you're making and live with the results. But I don't think it's a bad bet to make. I don't think it's the wrong bet to make. I think it would matter a little bit in terms of some of the context stuff around it. There's more value. You know, if I'm in a 20-man roster, it's tough to sit developmental guys, right? So if it's going to, you know, if there's a wide range of outcomes on a whole bunch of guys on my team, and all of a sudden, like, they're not playing, like, I'm in a roster crunch, right? If I'm in a 40-man roster, a guy like Christian Watson making a big difference or busting, like, I can afford to sit on him for a little bit longer, right, and sort of wait that out, and willing to sort of embrace some of that higher outcome. I think more and more embracing some of that high upside stuff at wide receiver, because we know how to get the floor stuff, right? Like, we could go out tomorrow and get cheap shares of Amari Cooper. We could go out and get cheap shares of Jarvis Landry, of Mike Evans, of Brandon Cooks. Like, we know that formula. It becomes then, are there situations in individual classes where, and this is one of those classes because there's not a lot of running backs, and, you know, is there a situation to take an upside swing? Right? And I think Sky Moore would be an upside swing. I think that Christian Watson would be an upside swing. And that's sort of my take on it. You know, what would I, you know, if I had to put them in order, I could change my mind by tomorrow, by the way. So you could literally put these guys in a Yahtzee, in like one of those Yahtzee tumbler things that tips out the dice. God, I feel old. For anyone that's younger than me, I actually did that when I was younger. And I'm sure no one knows what I'm talking about that's younger than me, but anyone older will be able to appreciate that, right? You just throw it in the thing, the Yahtzee thing, and just dump out the die and see where they come out. And you'd be like, all right, well, that's reasonable, right? This, you put these 6, 7, 8 guys in a tumbler, see where they come out, and be like, I could see that. And then you could do it again, and like, I could see that too. And you could keep doing that over and over and over again. And, you know, I could get on board with a lot of that. It's a lot of the reason why I want to trade down. Another reason is if I can take multiple shots too, right? Kind of arb that and say, listen, we can take, you know, we can maybe move down and take 2 shots. If is that possible? You know, whether it's you're moving down from, I don't know, 104 to 108, something like that, but also moving from, you know, a mid-second up into the first round, right? You're sort of doing one of those sandwich type trades, right? That might be a way to get you into this. I think that there's a range of that stuff. I think if I was going to settle on something, there's an earlier breakout on Olave, puts him over Wilson, I think. But I don't see either one of them as like a big time difference maker. I just, like, they're good players. But Olave, like, is basically a space guy that doesn't do anything after the catch. And, you know, Wilson wasn't super duper productive either. And everyone says, like, hey, he needs time to develop right now as a wide receiver too. That's probably dangerous. That feels like a Justin Jefferson comp. And even his comps, like some of his PFF comps and the like, they don't come out that great. And so ultimately I'm just like, and then, you know, Burks has some of his issues as well. And so, you know, I generally like the group. That said, I don't see if I see a ton of elite stuff in there. Right? If I were to say, like, what's an elite outcome look like? Probably Christian Watson hooking up early in his career with a guy like Aaron Rodgers or Sky Moore coming into 130 targets in Kansas City, right? Which I think are possible outcomes, right? I think they're maybe less likely than Chris Olave posting a top 24 season. But I think if you were to tell me, like, hey, one of, you know, these two guys have shots at top 12 seasons, I think maybe the better two picks would be, you know, multiple of them. I think maybe the better two picks would be Moore and Watson, even recognizing that that's not that likely of an outcome. So I do think it's a balance, and I think it depends on what type of bet you want to make. So for what that's worth, I am putting those guys in that tier. I'm going to do another show here talking about the board. Maybe I'll even do a video about it, walking you through some of the stuff. But I'll just read to you what I have about this tier. So again, in my top tier, I've got Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker, and Drake London. Listen, here's how much this class sucks at the top. Kenneth Walker has less than a catch per game in college. There's like three guys that have been first round rookie picks for the running back position that's happened to. So Ronald Jones and Ray Rice. Right? We're taking that guy at 103. That sucks. Right? That's not good. However, you're going to get like a first round wide receiver at 112, right? So I wonder if there's a tier that develops that you can actually trade out of a Kenneth Walker and just say, all right, let's kick the can. And can you get first round capital next year? You know, I'm not sure. That would be something I'd shoot for. You know, go from 102 to something later in the first round, something like that, and taking a future first next year. I don't know. I that would be something that I might be willing to try more so than than I maybe typically would with the top 50 running back, right? That's the thing there. So I'm open to that idea, right? I'm open to that idea. And honestly, I'm open to, if someone will give me a King's ransom for Hall, I want to do that too. Again, if I can get more capital and if I can take a shot and maybe, whether it's address some depth or just give me an asset from this class and get a first next year, I'm open to all that. So again, I know people have said like, you can't do that. I don't know. Like, I talked to Adam today, who's my editor, and he got Kittle for 107. So, like, I know that people don't think it's possible, but don't underestimate the ability to get paid off for picks, you know, and so that would be the other thing. And he actually did one for, it was 107. I think he also traded a later pick in a different draft too, and got a second this year, got some other stuff as well. So, so there's some, like, I think there is gettable trades here. You just have to be creative and really think about it, right? I do think there's the ability to get core assets for these guys. So for what that's worth, that's sort of my take on it. So, I left the top of the tier one empty. There's no top 10 quarterback or first round running back. So there's just not anyone there. I like London the most of any class. I'm willing to move off of any of the guys up there. You got to give me first plus some other stuff, but I'm willing to move off of anyone. Of course I am at any time, but that's, I think, important to point out. Then again, my next tier, again, I haven't published this yet, but I'm sort of reading you what my draft is now. So that way, if you are drafting, you have an idea of what of kind of what we're thinking. So I have tier three. It's Kenny Pickett, it's James Cook, and it's the receivers. It's Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams, Treylon Burks, Jahan Dotson, Christian Watson, Sky Moore. And so there's eight. What is that? I'm pretty sure that's eight guys total. So four wide receivers. Nine guys maybe? Pickett, Cook, Olave, Wilson, Williams, Burks, Jahan Dotson, Watson, and Sky Moore. Yeah. So, so seven wide receivers and the two other skill guys. So again, that takes us to basically the end of the first round. Here's my take on this. On one hand, Kenny Pickett is not a great prospect. On the other hand, the supply of quarterbacks is small and demand should be high in rookie drafts. If you get a chance to take a quarterback and extend out some of your core quarterbacks, right, give you three options or four options instead of three, or three options instead of two in a super flex league, like, there's value in doing that, even though Kenny Pickett's probably not going to be that great. He's going to the right franchise for a guy like him to work out. In many ways, he's the anti-Mac Jones. Mac Jones last year was the fifth quarterback off the board and became very much like a value in the mid-first, because you were like, all right, well, here's a quarterback option. He's cheaper than the rest of them. He's probably in a good class. 15 overall in a good quarterback class is pretty, like, that's actually, we should probably think of that higher than just the 15th overall pick. A third of the top 15 picks were quarterbacks. You should probably give some credit to that in terms of, you know, it's like, would you shoot at the golf course? Well, I shot 80. Well, just shoot 80 at a par three, or just shoot 80 at Bethpage Black. Like, this Kenny Pickett is shooting 80 at a par three. Mac Jones shot 80 at Bethpage, right? That's kind of where they find themselves, at draft capital wise versus their class. The flip side of the Pickett thing is, so he's not as good as Mac Jones would be, I think, the easy deduction to take from that. However, the economics of this is that he is one of one. Right? He's the only first-round guy at quarterback. And I think, reasonably, that's the only person that you can really look at and say, hey, we have some confidence here that he's going to be a starter. I can like Ritter. I can like Howell. I can like Willis. I can like Corral. They were selected on day two or day three of the draft. There's no guarantee that they're going to get starting opportunities. Pickett's going to get the opportunity to play. And so, could those guys work out? Yeah. Like, is there? Would I bet maybe the over on a half that one of them starts 50 games in their career? I think that's probably a fair. Like, that's probably a fair bet. I'd probably take the under on it, but I think it's in the range of outcomes of being fair. You know, if you were to give me the over under of 30, right, that's probably, I would take the over on that. On one of those guys doing that. So on one hand, Pickett's not as good as Mac Jones. On the other hand, this class stinks, and if you're looking for a quarterback, right, if you want to sort of extend or build from depth or create or try and build on a strength, taking a quarterback when it's versus a bunch of first round wide receivers, like, it's probably not the worst idea. Again, this might change for me when I actually have to pull the trigger on one of these. But if I'm sitting there at like a 108 in a rookie draft and Pickett like falls to me at Superflex, like, I'm, and especially if like some of the receivers that I like are gone, is it Pickett or is it James Cook? Right? Is it Pickett or is it, you know, Garrett Wilson? I think it's going to end up being Pickett. That's kind of my thought. Again, I'm just sitting on this for the first day, but I think it's a big tier and I think you can go away from it, but just the supply and demand aspect of this makes me lean towards taking Pickett. I have Pickett in that range. I think there's a giant tier there. So take who you like, you know, and the like there, with the caveat of just try and trade down. Right? Try and trade down and get more assets. And I do think getting them this year, I wasn't sure about this, but getting them this year, it's fine. Like, if you can get a second this year to move down handful of spots, like, I don't have a problem with that, because you're going to be able to flesh out the back end of your running back depth chart. I like that, you know, or you can maybe get tight end one, right? Depending on your depth of league, if it's, again, 20-man super flex, maybe that's not the play. If it's 28-man or beyond, fleshing out a tight end in the second round, that's a good process. That's a good process. You look at Freiermuth, you look at Komet, right? You just keep going back, and there's been guys, it's been Kosicki and, you know, Hunter Henry, and you just look at guys like that has been a lucrative sort of depth-building asset accumulation strategy. And in a class where there's not a big difference between 105 and 109, that trade down, adding the ability to get an extra pick in there that can be a potential contributor for you down the line, I like that play a lot. So that's really the first round for me. Again, if you, I'm trying to lay this out, and I don't want to tell you who to take. I think it matters in different teams, different constructs, the different bets you want to make. What I'm trying to tell you, and this is the thing about AOD that I think it's worth mentioning occasionally. This is a good time of year to mention it. I write AOD to help you. I write AOD and the productive struggle, the academic productive struggle way, right? Which is like, hey, we're going to sort of give you the tools to work on this. I don't need to give you every answer because the situation might not be, right? What my situation might be for my team or my goals might be different than the ones that you have, right? And so I think understanding the bet you want to make makes some sense. One team you might think that, maybe this is a situation where you want to diversify, right? Like, hey, listen, I don't have a strong take between Olave and Wilson. Like, all right, like if I'm faces one situation, I'll take Olave, I'll take half Wilson, right? I don't mind doing that either, right? That's, I think, fair. And I think what you're doing in this class is you're attempting to accumulate assets that you can use later on to upgrade something else. That's what you do in a wide receiver strong class. These are assets. We're going to use them to get better assets, whether that's right now or whether that's later on, right? That should be your goal. And that's really my goal in this class. Asset accumulation, not necessarily production, and go from there. All right, the next tier, I'm still working on this tier, but I do think, by the way, I do think James Cook is in this range. Very simply, I didn't actually finish all my notes here, so I'll finish this tier. On one hand, Pickett's not a great prospect. On the other hand, the supply of quarterbacks is small and demand should be high in rookie drafts. This is the note for this tier three. I doubt I'll have much Pickett unless he is in the end of the tier. Likewise with James Cook, I question if he's going to be a big impact as a two-way producer, but the shortage of immediate options at the running back position plus his base rate should bump him up into the tier. You look at his base rate, it's above anyone else in the range. The wide receivers are a big tier. I don't have a strong take on the ordering of them. I think Sky Moore should be higher than the ordering in his class because his 80th percentile outcome is really high. Same as Christian Watson. Whereas I think Dotson has a higher floor than Watson. The big question will be how to arb this. Right? Make two bets in the range instead of one or collect future pedigree. Right. That's kind of that's the quick and dirty of the advice there. Some of the rest of the stuff, I mean, when in doubt, just take a day two running back, right? So you've got options, Brian Robinson, Rashad White, Ty Davis Price, even though I was hoping that the Elijah Mitchell experience would put me out of my misery on trying to figure out day two running backs to San Francisco, but that lasted an entire year and now I have to do it again. So color me skeptical on being excited about that. It was high. I actually liked him more than the market. So I was happy to be right on that one. Rashad White, Brian Robinson, both land there. Again, I think they're more injury away types that their pedigree suggests will get starting opportunities. Again, what's the formula? Formula is very simple. And I think as we look at this, like it's these guys versus George Pickens and Alec Pierce and Trey McBride sort of on my tentative tiers. I have it right now. Again, I have to edit it and make sure I'm including everyone in the like, but I'm just trying to take you through my process. This will get us kind of into the middle of the second round, which would be what I'm trying to accomplish for this particular podcast. And then we'll do something a little bit more tomorrow. You just take the base rates, guys, right? Just take the running backs. And again, what do? We're trying to build out teams. And right, this year's Rashad White. Is 2 years ago is Damian Harris, right? And then he gets some starts and you're just backfilling, right? You're backfilling, you just keep doing that, and you're just trying to over and over again replenish and sort of you know, build out that core of running backs and that they're contributors, right? But they're going to cycle through. And so you're getting a discount on Rashad White now, and then with the hopes that he potentially starts, you know, next year, and, you know, that potentially phases out someone on your team. I don't know, like James Conner, or, you know, Damian Harris gets, you know, becomes more of an injury away type or whatever, right? You just, it's the cycle of life at the running back position. You just take them now, stash them away. Listen, you're an injury away guy with an opportunity to start. I like that for Rashad White. I like that for Brian Robinson. I can't say I like anything for Ty Davis Price, even though I like him as a player. I feel burned. I feel burned dissed, I guess, by Kyle Shanahan. So I'm not sure how I feel on him. Again, I like him as a player, and I'd probably take him in that tier. But it's more kidding, and this is more shtick than anything. But killing me skeptical on getting my heart rate up for that situation. After that, again, I'm still fleshing this out, but if you get into like third rounds or something like that, you know, Algier, Damian Pierce, again, be careful on Damian Pierce getting too expensive. Isaiah Spiller, I really like because I think he's their second best running back right now. This tier would also probably be where I would take some of the quarterbacks. Listen, I think you could argue taking them with Rashad White and those guys. I think you could argue some of the quarterback stuff. I'm dubious of doing that for the simple reason of, if I put the quarterbacks there, everyone will kind of take them in that range. Whereas my preferred option would be like, just take the third guy. I just take, you know, whether it's Corral Willis or Desmond Ridder, just take the third one of them. That would sort of be my angle. So I put them in the next tier down. As I sit here right now, I have to organize it and exactly get it right. But my advice to you there before the big board comes out would be just take the last one. Right? Don't get over aggressive. Don't take the first one. If you want to take a developmental shot at quarterback, take a shot on Desmond Ridder, Malik Willis, or Matt Corral, whoever the last one on the board is. Right? You're not in a range where these guys are projected to be long-term starters. So if you want to make a bet, make the cheapest one. Right? This is taking Davis Mills last year behind Kellen Mond, behind Kyle Trask, and the like. Right? Just take the cheapest one. That would sort of be my thought. Again, you're doing that against Isaiah Spiller, Damian Pierce, Tyler Algier types. Those are one injury away guys. You know, you're doing it. I think, you know, you could make an argument like, if on the clock, would you want Alec Pierce or would you want, you know, quarterback three of that tier, right? So maybe I do have to kind of figure out a couple of those questions and figure out how you'd balance that. But I think it's more, right, I'd rather have White, Pickens, you know, the guys in that tier ahead of quarterback one of that range, right? And then, you know, if it's deciding between Alec Pierce and quarterback three, maybe you take quarterback three of that range, right? That would kind of be how I would think about it right now. So again, I have some more work to do. I'll have more content for this for you tomorrow, but I hope this helps your process. And if you have any drafts starting up here, we do have AOD real draft position. It is cycling in. We have a handful of drafts, a handful of picks that have been made in the last like 48 hours. If you want to go to the start date here, just pick the start date of what I've been doing is picking the start date of April 29th. And that'll get you the day of the start of the draft. And you just go there. You know, pick start date, the 29th, the end date will be whatever the day it is. And then just make sure you're picking rookie. And then it'll give you an idea of sort of some of the stuff that's coming off the board. All right, that would sort of be how I'd hope. And again, as we get 24, 48, 96 hours past the draft, we'll have more and more data and we'll have more and more of an idea of where the value spots are on our board. So if you see trades in drafts, let me know. I'd be really interested to see how those are going down. And you know, then we can have an idea of where we might sort out some of these board stuff. So, all right, that's going to do it for this edition. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.